Dear friend, just a few lines to let you hear from me. I am well and hope you are the same. This is what I said on that Christmas card from WJH with L. I hope you understand what I mean. This is what I said. Now, please don't get angry with me because you can never tell what may get in somebody. I did not put it in there myself. God did. I can't help what he does, can I? I know you don't think much of our kind of people, but we don't hate you all. We want to be your all's friends, but you won't let us. Please don't let anybody see this. I hope I haven't made you mad. If I did, tell me about it, and I'll forget about it. I wish this was a northern state. I guess you call me fresh. Write and tell me what you think of me, good or bad. Sincerely yours, with L. From YKW. To Cynthia Goff, I love your name, I love your voice. For an SH, sweetheart, you are my choice. This is Dr. Marvin Dunn, and this is The Storyteller, with my brother, Dr. Raymond Dunn, and technical assistance from Raymond Dunn, Jr. The story today, the lynching of Willie James Howard.
Thank you, bro, for that introduction. Appreciate it. Now, bro, give us a little context here. When did this take place and where?
1944 in Live Oak, Florida.
1944. All right. Yeah. Bro, why is this considered similar to the Emmett Till story?
Because the same thing happened. Emmett Till was a young black boy who was lynched in 1955 in Money, Mississippi, for allegedly making a pass at a white woman.
Right.
And the woman's husband and two white men went to the boy's home. I think, well, he was living with his uncle at the time, and abducted him and lynched him. It made worldwide news, the Emmett Till lynching. I was 15 years old at the time.
What did his mom do that made it national, worldwide news?
She had the boy's casket left open at his funeral. I saw the disfigured face of this boy. It was the first time I'd seen a dead person photographed, in this case in Jet Magazine. His mother wanted the world to see what these people did. They took the boy and killed him and dumped him into a dam or something, into a river. His body was found several days later.
Okay,
so this case became
Emmett Till.
That was Emmett Till.
Okay, so what happened to Willie James Howard?
Same thing. Willie James Howard was Florida's Emmett Till, and it happened years before Emmett Till. This happened in Florida in 1944. Mm-hmm. This story bothers me more than any other story that I've followed. One, because it involved the murder of a child, the lynching of a child. And also because it never got known. It was a silent lynching that history sort of glossed over, didn't even notice, as a matter of fact. So it's a story that grabs me. I've been to the boy's grave several times in Live Oak. So we need to tell this story about little Willie James Howard and what happened to him in Live Oak, Florida, around Christmas time, 1944, when they killed him.
What brought this up?
Well, I went to Live Oak several times, and I talked to people who knew him. I talked to a woman, Dorothy DePass, who was a classmate of his, who said, oh, he was cute, smart dresser, that he was an only child, so his parents made sure he looked good all the time. She had kind of a twinkle in her eye. Now, she's in her 80s when she's telling me this story.
But she still remembers.
She remembered that he was a smart dresser. He could sing. He was smart. He was courteous. I interviewed a woman who taught at the school, the black school where he attended. She didn't teach him, she said, but she knew him. She said he could sing. Everybody said he could sing and was very courteous. If he met you, he would step aside and what have you. So he was a well-mannered, smart boy who was so well-mannered and so smart that he got a job during Christmas break, 1943, to work at the Van Priest Five and Dime store, downtown Live Oak, Florida. This is in North Florida. That was unusual for a black boy to get a job like that, working inside, delivering medicine to white folks, and, you know, the kinds of tasks that black kids didn't get to do. But he was smart. He was noticeably smart and all of the other things that would make him an attractive employee. So he worked at the Five and Dime store and made a serious mistake. He fell in love with a white girl.
Wait. Now, was it a serious mistake or was it an honest mistake?
It was a serious mistake. He fell in love with a white girl. That in 1943 was a serious mistake. It was a deadly mistake.
Well, deadly, yes. Okay, go ahead.
The girl's name was Cynthia Goff. She was a beauty queen at her high school. I saw a photograph of her. Very beautiful girl. Very, very beautiful girl. And around Christmas time, Willie James sent a Christmas card to all the women who worked in the store. And he heard back that Cynthia Goff was offended by the card that she got from him. So he wrote her a letter, which I have a copy of. And her father.
Well, one of the reasons I wanted you to read that is because I wanted people, this generation, to hear those words and draw their conclusion in context of where we are today. What would have been so darn offensive about those words?
Well, it brought about the age-old Southern problem of black men or boys being attracted to white females. And this letter posed that threat to this girl's father and his couple of friends who he managed to get to join him to take this boy and kill him. So we don't really know how Mr. Goff got that letter. She may have given it to him. He may have discovered it on his own. Mm-hmm. But in any case, her father got the letter. Phil Goff was his name, a former member of the Florida House of Representatives, actually.
A respectable guy.
Yeah. So what Mr. Goff did was on a Saturday morning, Willie James heard they were coming for him. Goff got two men. Willie James heard that they were coming to the Fine and Dime store to get him, so he ran home. Mm-hmm. And there he was on his front porch at his mother's knees trying to tell her what was happening. And at that moment, the car drives up with these three men. And Mr. Goff has a pistol. And she's trying to tell the boy, tell me what happened. And they tell her, turn him loose or we'll shoot you too. So they take the boy, screaming and crying, put him in the car. The mother runs after the car down the road. The car takes the boy away. And they go to where the boy's father, James Howard, worked at a lumber yard. And they made him, probably didn't have to make him. They had his boy in the back of the car with a gun on him. So Mr. Howard gets into the car. And they drive out of Live Oak. They go out to Sulphur Springs on the Suwannee River.
Near the Suwannee River, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, it is at the Suwannee River. It's the spring that runs off of it. But they go some 10 or 12 miles out of town to kill this boy. On the way out to...
Back up now. Are you sure that they're going to kill him? Is that their purpose?
Let me put it this way. They made Mr. Goff ordered him, or in fact did, bind the boy's hands and feet on the way to the river. They tied him up.
With a gun to his head, right?
Yeah, they tied him up and tied his hands and feet in the car. There was no talking, silent ride out to the car, out to the river. And when they get there, they go to the edge of the river, and Goff puts the pistol to Willie James's head and tells him, jump or take what's in this gun. And his father's watching this. So Willie James takes his wallet, gives it to his dad, and his father says more or less to him, I'm glad you went to church, son. He jumped in the river.
May I stop you right there? Because I've heard a version of this story that says that they took Willie James Howard out there. They picked his father up to go with them because they wanted the father to whip him for writing that letter.
That was a lie that came out after discovered that the boy was dead, and people knew that these men took this boy and his father out to the river. That story was their excuse. They said that Willie James tried to get away from getting a whipping from his father and fell into the river. Mm-hmm. Now, one reason that I know that that's the official white version of what happened to Willie James Howard is that I went to the newspaper in Live Oak, the Suwannee Democrat, the only newspaper in Live Oak, one of the oldest newspapers in Florida, as a matter of fact, and I asked to speak to the publisher, a white woman, and I told her what happened, and she knew the story. And I asked her, so what's the official position of the community on what happened to Willie James? She said, oh, that was an accidental drowning. I said, excuse me? Oh, he drowned. He was trying to get away from getting a whipping, and he fell into the river and drowned himself. And Dr. Dunn, the white man who were with him, tried to save his life, and his father wouldn't do anything. His father just watched. Mm. But they couldn't save the boy, and that's what happened.
That's what she is putting out there as what happened.
That's what I was told in 2007 when I went on one of my several trips to Live Oak to find out what happened. The sheriff orders the black undertaker, a man named Ansel Brown, mm-hmm. to go out to the river and get the boy's body and bury it in an unmarked grave. There was no inquest, no inquiry.
No autopsy.
No, not even a death certificate, as far as we know. Of course, no autopsy. Mm-hmm. So Mr. Brown goes out, gets the boy's body, buries him. So Willie James was abducted, murdered, and buried within 24 hours and forgotten.
With the knowledge of the sheriff.
Well, they did call the white men in. And these men told the sheriff that, yeah, we took him out to give him a whipping. You know, one of the things I find most frustrating about this story?
What?
Even if it was unlikely that these men would be convicted or even charged with lynching this boy, why were they not charged with kidnapping?
Exactly.
You go to somebody's house, you take their child at gunpoint, and you don't get charged. Even in Florida in 1944, that was illegal.
Eventually, I understand that the NAACP came in. How did the word get out?
That was a black lawyer from Live Oak who was home, I'm sure from out of town, when this happened, and he heard that a black boy had been lynched in his hometown. And he contacted the national NAACP, and that got Walter White, who was the president of the NAACP in New York, and Thurgood Marshall, who was at that time the general counsel. Mm-hmm. And they all became involved in this case because of this lawyer who was able to pass on this information.
Now, that brings me back to my question, because they did have a grand jury. And you were asking the question, then why were they not charged for kidnapping?
No, Mr. Howard himself, James Howard, who was on the scene, was not called.
Mm-hmm.
No, just two questions that were asked, and then that was the end of it. It didn't last 5 minutes by the time they were out of it. I must say, though, that there was an inquiry by the governor at the time. The governor appointed a special investigator to come down, and this man came down, and he did do a study, did a review, and he told the governor, this boy was killed by these men, and it was illegal. He told the governor that.
Mm-hmm.
And Thurgood Marshall and Walter White have letters that they wrote to the governor saying, do something. Even your own investigator says it was an illegal act. And the governor's position was that white men in Live Oak in Suwanee County will never be convicted of killing a black boy. So why pursue this beyond what we now have done? So that was the end of it.
That is so shameful. Yeah. That is shameful.
Yeah. And then you got to fast forward several years to the time when the event became known, or at least revisited in that community, by Mr. Udell. Mr. Douglas mm-hmm. Udell is a black man who is an undertaker in Live Oak. In fact, he took over the business from Ansel Brown.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how Mr. Udell knew that this had happened.
Exactly.
He had the big book from Mr. Brown. So Douglas Udell, who also became a Suwanee County Commissioner,
mm-hmm.
which he says shows how far the county has come since this happened. He was elected, and this is a majority of white county
mm-hmm.
that he managed to get elected as a county. I think at one time he was chairman of the county commission at one time. Anyway, Douglas Udell was the one who took the lead to get a grave marker for Willie James and to have a proper memorial service for him in Live Oak. He was a hero to have done that.
That is a sad ending.
Well, I interviewed Willie James' aunt. Her name was Mamie Perry. She lived in Orlando. She was almost 100 years old when I met her. Spent a good part of an afternoon with her. Feisty lady, living by herself. And I asked her, so, Miss Perry, what do you do to keep yourself busy? She says, well, I go over to the old folks' home and help the old folks sometimes on Mondays.
She's how old now?
She was 99 when I met her. And she said, you know, the yard man hadn't been here since 2 weeks ago. If he don't come in tomorrow, I'm going to do my yard myself. Very independent woman. She told me that Willie James' mother, Lula, and her husband, James, came to her house
mm-hmm.
when this happened, drove to her house in Orlando, told her what had happened. She said her sister never smiled again.
Mm.
She said this was her only child. She never saw him from the time they took this boy.
Mm-hmm.
And she said it broke her heart. It broke her sister's heart. She never recovered from it. The father died some years earlier. James Howard passed on, but Mrs. Howard lived much longer. I have a gorgeous photograph of Mrs. Howard. So when you think about the tragedies associated with these kinds of events, it's not just the person who was lynched
right,
who was damaged. It's the people that they leave behind.
Exactly.
And in this case, exactly. A grieving family that was not even allowed to talk about what had happened.
And the hurt in the black community that yeah. these types of things could happen and nothing is done about it.
Well, you know, I met the sheriff of Suwanee County during the course of my investigation. I went and met him.
And?
He could not have been more helpful. Nice man, very, very nice man. His name may come to me before the interview is over. But when I was doing this research, going to these towns where these lynchings happened, I always went to the sheriff's office first to let them know I'm in town and I'm doing this research because, you know, I was driving a car that was very noticeable at the time. Mm-hmm. People knew when I was there anyway. But I wanted to make sure that if something happened to me, the sheriff knew that I was in town, in the county. Mm-hmm. He was extraordinarily nice. And he said, yeah, I know Miss Goff. She's still around. I said, well, I'd like to talk to Cynthia Goff. He said, no, you can't. I don't think that's going to work. But he picks up the phone and he calls Cynthia Goff's best friend. He said, maybe she'll talk to you. She wouldn't, but she talked to the sheriff. Mm-hmm. He told me that she told him on that phone call that Cynthia was suffering from dementia, was not well, and that Cynthia regretted what happened to Willie James, that it never left her life that this happened, that she did not intend for the boy to be killed. And she passed her life still doing the same thing she was doing when Willie James met her in that Five and Dime store, still working downtown in different stores and what have you. So that's the tragic story of this boy. I made a film about it, Murder on the Swan. It's on my webpage.
Okay. Yeah, we will encourage our listeners to look at that.
Please do. But that's the story of Willie James Howard.
But bro, I want to thank you for that very touching story. And I understand now why you say that this is one of the most difficult stories for you to tell, but you did a darn good job of telling us what happened. I thank God that we'll have people like you who will go back at some risk, bring these stories back to life, and let those of us who've never heard about them learn about some of Florida's horrific past. Thank you very much. We thank you for listening to The Storyteller, a production of MR2D Media. This and other stories are available at donehistory.com, tbeunfiltered.com, or in print, Miami in the 20th Century by Dr. Marvin Dunn.